This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the...
The Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
I'm curious how. I'm curious how I have more free time than you.
No, I'm going to...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking off for the next hour?
Fun. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
You gotta fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. And never again I'll go say.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. We got Raw on one TV, we got the Sox and Rays on another, and I got two gentlemen with me to talk a little bit of everything. A little potpourri for you here on this Monday. Scott, welcome in.
Good evening, JR. Good evening, PTB Nation. Welcome to the episode. I usually have the window up.
Clown show.
241. The Place to Be Podcast.
And we have a special guest with us tonight, Scott.
Yes.
This man was here in the man cave just a day ago, chilling, hanging out, maxing, relaxing, all cool. Was not shooting any b-ball outside of this cool. Of course, that is my good friend and yours, Mr. Brad Woodling. Brad, how are you?
What's up, boys? Good to be here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, as I mentioned, and as you may have seen across the Place to Be network of Facebook pages, Mr. Woodling was here in Rhode Island this past weekend,
mm-hmm.
along with Mr. Mark Poirier. We got a little PTB Nation staff retreat, and then we did a little Ring of Honor. A lot of fun. So we're going to talk about the weekend, and then just to give you guys a heads up, when we get to the show, we will let you know, we'll alert you. There are going to be spoilers for the next 4 weeks of Ring of Honor television. They did the full taping here in Providence. We are going to talk about the matches and the results. Not starting right now, but when we get there, we'll let you know, and that way if you want to skip ahead, if you like to go in fresh to the TV, or if you haven't read the spoilers yet, you can go ahead and fast forward. So... Brad, you came in on Friday. How was your flight?
Quick and easy, solid 40 minutes, and a really smart idea coming in the night before, and got to see Andy Flanagan again, picked up at the Providence Airport, headed back to Coventry for a Friday night in the West Warwick section of Rhode Island.
Yeah, we did a little man cave hanging. As Scott knows, I'm a big proponent of the night before come in. As you know, it avoids that early morning wake up, avoids any snafus that may happen with travel.
Yep.
And it allows you that fresh start. Now, as you said, that was a good idea, right? Allowed you to have a fresh. We slept in a little bit Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it was good to go because Saturday was a jam-packed bell-to-bell day of Place to Be stuff. So
let's talk a little bit about Friday night
yep.
in the viewing in the man cave, because you've seen what very few men have seen before you.
It's true. You know, when we were driving back, you said to me, are you ready for some WCF? And I know my itinerary had me getting a guided tour of the Lakeside Arena the next day. And so I thought, like, we're going there now? You know, it's dark and whatever. And then when we got back to the man cave, I realized you were talking about, you know, you have the discs, you know, seldom, as you said, seldom seen. You know, Scott talked about this in the podcast about the WCF. He has a bunch of comps and stuff, and I'm working on one too. But I got to see the original unedited version of WrestleFest and some other highlights from that famed promotion in Rhode Island. And so that was a Friday night in Coventry, and it was a lot of fun and some really, really cool stuff.
You also had your first Harpoon beer. Did you like that?
I did.
Okay. Mm. Now, did the Max Flyer Sexy Steve Winter War match hold up to the billing?
It did. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match.
No, that was the next match.
That was the next one.
Yeah, this was a straight up match.
Yes, it. That was at the indoor Lakeside Arena.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an amazing match. And as the story goes, the finish was aborted twice to keep the match going. You know, really great work in the ring to kind of lead that and. Amazing stuff. Some real heavy hits back then. So that was definitely a cool one.
Was the Wes Warwick screw job at WrestleFest? Did that live up to the hype?
You know, it really did. You know, if you listen to the podcast for it, and I listened to it again after I watched the video, and you really get a better sense of it. You know, to kind of understand the guys that Josh had and the guys that you had, and Matt, who was there too, and the whole Jolter Flash dynamic for the main event, the screw job. And what people have to remember is this screw job happened in August of 1994. So we're talking 3+ years before Montreal. And it was a pretty creative screw job too. You know, the title is supposed to change hands and the heel is the champ. But really, you know, it's almost like a little bit of a double turn too.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jolter, you know, didn't have any face qualities, didn't sell, no sympathy. You know, if you showed that to me in a vacuum without listening to the podcast first, I probably would have thought he was the heel. You know, even though, you know, Fino Flash had Doc Holliday, his famed manager there. But, you know, really the genius was that the DQ finish to not turn it over came from, you know, of course, Mack Truck, not even Flash's own manager in that. And then that cost Jolter from winning the belt. Goes on a little bit of a shoot. And then, of course, we get the very infamous promos that they both cut that, honest to God, live up to a lot of the things that you'll see. Even today, there's a couple guys, you know, that I saw at Ring of Honor that could probably take a couple lessons from that tape. Really set up as a great angle, and it was definitely a good show.
And my final question is, what did you think of the commentary of the late, great Mike Filthball McKenna?
You know, he certainly had something with referee Rich, but it didn't take away from it. From me. I thought he did fantastic, and a big kudos to him. His enthusiasm was awesome. You know, he repeated a couple things, but again, you know, it was the first real show. You know, I can't hold it against it, but, you know, he got right in that ring afterwards trying to get it off the air, you know, a real pro all the way to the end of that first show there. I know he only got to do a couple events before he stepped away from it, but which is a shame. But it was definitely very good. Certainly the highlight of the commentary. You know, in addition to, you know, some other things too, like Samuel, you know, of course, him collapsing the ring, which you talk about. And, you know, you have to talk about how, like, you know, television adds like 15 pounds or whatever. But Samuel the Giant, I mean, I think he probably looked about 250 pounds lighter in that video than when I had first imagined. and then you had, you know, the Rocker taking a powerbomb in the opening match, which I'm sure he got, you know, you tell me, I mean, I'm sure he got some shit from the boys in the back for pulling that out in the opener, right?
Well, you know,
like that's hard out there.
The first pay-per-view, though, you're going to go out with a bang. You know, you're going to kick things off with a bang.
Yeah.
Going to make it memorable.
I tell you what, I mean, that spot had me on my feet. I could not believe that I just witnessed that on in the WCF. But
so we watched that. We also watched some early John Walters footage.
We did.
With him and Andy Hawaiian Punch. What grade would you have given that project, Brad?
I would have gone, you know, they probably asked for what, like 6 minutes, and you probably gave them
about 22,
21 with commercials would make it 30. So, you know, you were aiming for public access, I bet, with that one, and it would have fit perfectly. But yeah, that was a solid A, and it sprinkled in a little bit of wrestling stuff too with that John did at the end, which I thought was pretty cool.
Okay. So now we went to bed. The next day, woke up around 9. And, Scott, I did something with Brad that you've never done in your multitude of trips here.
Mm-hmm.
Brad accompanied me to a wake.
So yes. That was, like I said, jam-packed. So he was like, we're going to a wake on Saturday morning. Yeah. So
he sat in the boiling, steaming hot car. Like a dog with the window down? Is that what
I was going to get out and wait outside. But yes.
So I was in and out of there. But then, Scott, he did something that you've done quite a few times, and that was visit the famed Lakeside Arena.
Yes. Yes, I have. I have been there.
And we had a little encounter that happened while there.
And, you did.
And it happens to be footage of this encounter. It's about 10 minutes long, Scott.
Okay.
And when we launch the official Place to Be Nation YouTube channel, that'll be the first video posted. It's Brad's roving report of the Lakeside Arena. So if you WCF fans,
I'm very much
there,
looking forward to that.
Stay tuned. It was an interesting morning. So
I do have one question. Brad, there was no red-faced monsters climbing over the fence behind the shed, right? It was very quiet.
Well, the shed is no longer there.
Correct.
So
the shed is gone.
That's kind of like the whole like trip through time thing. Time had forgotten this arena and what it once was, although the lake was still there, obviously. That was
so cool. But, I bet you it's still in better shape than the Sportatorium. So, but I guess you didn't see the infamous monster. Oh, well.
All right. So from there, we went and picked up Mr. Poirier at the airport, hopped in the car. We came home, changed quick. Mr. Flanagan arrived, and we were ready for our PTB Nation power lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hit up the Boneheads. It was me, Brad, Mark, Flanagan, Mr. Josh Richer, Miss Jen Engel joined us.
Oh,
had a little staff meeting. I thought it went pretty well. Brad, did you enjoy the food at Boneheads?
I did.
It's good stuff, right?
Wings at like 11 o'clock in the morning. We were not holding back on the day.
No.
So
can't go wrong with that.
Tremendous.
And so we hung out there. We came back here, watched a few high school videos. Right, a little Hendrick. What was your favorite Hendrickin video, Brad?
Oh, man. You know, well, really, it was interesting seeing a young Andy Flanagan and his acting abilities back there. You know, I'd say it was probably a tie between the medieval one and of course, the infamous Halloween and the beating that Josh Richer has to take.
Yes, he did take quite a beating.
A lot of passion, a lot of tension, too. You know, I'm sure there's a behind the movie type story to be told with that one, too.
A lot of anger in the air that day. Yes. So you liked the medieval more than the Romans? Was that due to Josh Richards dancing?
Yeah, I mean, every one of these has like a musical interlude where everybody just starts randomly dancing and music plays in the background. It's really quite genius. So.
That's true.
I would like to hear more about how it went over with the classroom of kids, girls included.
There were no girls. We've been over this.
Oh, that's right. We've been over this. I can't get over the I have to get out of my head that it was an all-boys school. So
a lot of angst. Okay, so from there, we went to Trinity Brewhouse.
Mm.
Had a couple brewskis. We had some dinner. And then, with a little buzz on, we walked over to the convention center for our evening of Ring of Honor. And this, folks, is where there'll be some spoilers, so if you want to skip ahead a little bit as we break down the taping, and if not, stay and join us. We were there, we enjoyed it, had a good time, we're going to talk about it. So we walked in, a very unique setup, Scott. They were all the way at the very top of the convention center, so the upper floor.
Mm-hmm.
They had all three sections open, so it was about the size of my holiday party this year. And we walk in, and Brad, right away you noted, and I agreed, that it was gorgeous, that it was completely air-conditioned and, like, ice-cold in there.
Absolutely. You know, you think of, like, the ECW arena and, like, these, like, sweaty, and you got 98% dudes, and you're on top of each other. And in here, it was laid out awesome, great lighting, easy ways to move around, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And it, like you said, air-conditioned and cool. It was my first Ring of Honor event, of course, my first trip to Providence, so I was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, so we walked in right at the very end. Well, actually, we first walked in. We met the guys from CW28. So I talked to the Twitter guy there that I always converse with. I won me a little cup on the spin the wheel, make the deal thing they had going on. Walked inside. We caught the very, very last moment of the dark match. Slick Wagner Brown defeated Rocco Caprice. And then ring announcer Bobby Cruz, who's local from the area, came out and set up the first taping that'll be starting up there soon. Brad and I grabbed the beer. Very fairly priced, about $5, not too bad.
Wow, that is pretty good.
They had some merch. Brad purchased a couple DVDs. Brad, tell us about them.
Yeah, which ones, Brad?
Yeah, well, I have a pretty good kind of my background with ROH is, you know, I'm from the Philadelphia area, but it doesn't air on TV there. So I know it's on the internet, but I don't have that opportunity to DVR it. So I mainly catch up with like the full stories on the compilations. So that's really what I have for their library. And they had a huge table of that stuff, and they were fairly priced at $15. Usually they go for $20 online, and when they run a sale, at best they're $15. So you save on the shipping, save on the tax. And so there's some good convenience there. So I picked up a couple I needed to get was the year one and year two sets. And year two features John Walters, friend of the show, and versus Vincent, friend of the Place to Be boys. So, or Xavier, I'm sorry.
I think you're thinking of Michael Vincent.
Michael Vincent, yikes. Also a friend of the show. Scott, Xavier, not Michael Vincent. That'd be interesting to see. And then also the newer Eddie Edwards one, also a guy that's been on the show. I was impressed with him. He was pretty over, but he did a lot of the New England indies, if I recall correctly. Yep. So
big in this
he's
area.
Pretty big up there. He has a newer one out that has a 2-hour shoot, and then like his title run, shouldn't say newer, it was probably when the matches went into like the mid-2012. And then also got one of the Tyler Black ones that I wanted to see because I haven't seen too much of him before he came to WWE.
All right, so you picked those up. We went over to our seats. We were on the side about 7 rows back, and not a bad seat in the house here. I mean, it was only about 8 rows deep all around the ring. So, but like Brad said, plenty of walking room, which was great. You could really just kind of roam around and stand. And we ran into a friend of mine, George, that was working security. So we were bullshitting with him for a little bit and still able to watch the action, which was cool. Just a nice atmosphere, really. So the opener, Adrenaline Rush, ACH, and Tadarius Thomas with the worst theme music in recorded history. Beat 3.0, Scott Parker and Shane Matthews. ACH got the win there. Fine opener, nothing special. This is kind of a showcase for Adrenaline Rush and ACH setting him up for his tournament match.
Right.
Nigel McGuinness in an in-ring promo. He said he was forced to strip Jay Briscoe of the ROH World title, which we saw a couple weeks ago on TV. For the first time in history, the title is vacant, but Scum is now done. The war is over. Order has been restored. Doctors have said Jay cannot wrestle, and then in a funny little chant, the fans chanted Jay should man up. And Nigel said we'll have a new champion, and with that said, they're going to put more emphasis on the tag titles until the world champion's crowned. That brought out the champs, Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. Bobby said they were supposed to have a Proving Ground match against the Forever Hooligans here tonight, but instead of a Proving Ground, let's up the ante and make it a title match. Big applause from the crowd. Fish was awesome here, so we didn't do it for the fans. And then fans were shitting on him, and Fish told him to shut up, that they didn't come here to listen to him and all this stuff. And he was really good. From what I've read and seen, that's kind of what he's known for, is being really quick on his feet with that kind of stuff. The Wolves came out to a good pop, and Davey gave Fish props for putting the titles on the line. The Wolves said they're not in the tag world championship tournament because they want the tag titles. They're focused on a tag run, and that's what they want to do. I want to quickly point out the crowd here, Brad, see if you can back me up, but I thought the crowd was amazing here the whole night, and it kicked off here early, but it was red hot, banging on the things and yelling and into everything, and I mean, honestly, for all 4 hours, they pretty much stayed hot and live, so I'm curious to see how it comes off on TV.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and so I didn't have much of a baseline on it, and of course, you know, they spent some time, you know, the announcers talking about, you know, how this was a great crowd, and you know, and they had put together, you know, the CEO was there for ROH, so you know, they kind of had a little bit of extra pep in their step, and they really put over the crowd. But you know, that always happens. But then, you know, talking to Sean Radican, who was actually sitting two down from me later on in the night, he was talking about like how awesome the crowd was for an indie show. So taking that as that, it really was it was as good as we thought it was.
Right, and they, you know, Providence has had a good couple weeks here for indie wrestling.
Yeah.
Because, as we talked about, Scott, last time, the Beyond Wrestling show that was here a couple weeks ago on a Sunday drew a great crowd and did really, really well. So
right.
Providence kind of reclaiming its little hotbed status that it had in the 80s and early 90s as a wrestling
good.
Town. I really want to talk to Kevin when we have him on next week and ask him, you know, if those feelings were legitimate and if it's going to bring more, you know, Ring of Honor to Providence.
Right. I like to think so. Crowds are good. They're making money.
Yeah. I mean, the crowd is very good. So I'm curious, you know, if they drew well as far as, like, merchandise and everything else went. And...
Now, was the two shows weren't in the same place, right? The Forever Wrestling show wasn't in the same place, right?
Beyond Wrestling, you mean?
Somewhere else? I mean, Beyond Wrestling.
No, that was, like, in a bar.
Oh, okay. Oh. Certainly not this.
No, the convention center is fairly... I mean, it's not huge, but it's a decent size. I mean, It's bigger than probably that room we were in at Twin River for TNA, I would say.
Oh, for TNA? Oh, okay.
Yeah, a little bit bigger than that. So,
okay.
It's just like a big ballroom, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next match, Silas Young, my boy, defeated Adam Page and QT Marshall in a ROH title tournament qualifying match to get the last spot. Young picked up the win. Marshall was not originally in the match. He came out and bitched, and they added him to the match. So I was a little bit afraid he may win. But Silas advanced, the last real man. One of my favorites right now. And then the main event of episode 1, Forever Hooligans, Alex Kozloff and Rocky Romero defeated Red Dragon to capture the ROH tag team titles.
What?
pretty big upset, a big match for us to see live. The crowd, the match was awesome. The crowd was just fucking going insane.
Oh, yeah.
The match was phenomenal. If you are a fan, this is why I'm glad we're kind of giving the spoiler, because you guys need to watch this. If you have an ROH affiliate or you want to go online, this tag match is going to air this Saturday. It's the main event of the show. Well worth your time to check it out. I can't wait to watch it again with a more constructive eye. Just all four went all out. The Hooligans are really, really good. And Red Dragon held up their end of the bargain, and really awesome to see a big title change like that. I definitely didn't expect it. Although, a little bit, when they put the titles on the line, I kind of said, oh, maybe they'll do it, but I didn't think the Hooligans were hanging around as much, so I didn't think they were going to win. Right. But I'm guessing now they move into maybe something with American Wolves for the next set of either tapings or the next pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Were you excited for that, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the crowd was super hot, and you know, they did a lot of great false finishes with, like, just barely breaking up the counts to really kind of build it. And then they did, you know, like a backslide off of something to get the win, and that really popped the crowd, because yep. It's cool when little stuff like that wins it. And good celebration afterwards, and definitely a great way to cap off the first episode.
All right, so then we move on to episode number 2, Mike Bennett with Maria, who's just unbelievable to see in person, especially as up close as we would get later. Defeated Brutal Bob Evans, his former corner man. Bennett hit the TKO, which is actually pretty impressive because Bob Evans is a big guy. And not even just fat. He's just like a rugged guy. His like quads were humongous. A lot more edge for Bennett. And Bob worked hard, put him over. Cheeseburger, the guy who has been abused on and off by Scum and then by Bennett as well, tried to interfere after the match, and Bennett beat him down. And then he ripped up a contract, which I believe, or he signed a contract, which I believe was terminating his relationship with Bob Evans. And I'm not sure if that was, it was kind of hard to understand what was going on. I couldn't tell if that was his Ring of Honor contract that he's been carrying around or what it was exactly. But in a woman's match, Mischief beat Jesse Brooks. That was kind of sloppy, kind of the first down match of the night. No fault of Mischief, but Jesse Brooks was not very good, and I'd never heard of her before, and she did not really seem to know what she was doing in there. Huge pop for Kevin Steen came out. And we had arguably made the next best match of the night, I thought, Brad.
Definitely.
And that is the 6-man tag main event. It was the honor match. All 6 guys were faces, and they were just fighting to basically just put over how great Ring of Honor was. Kevin Steen, Michael Elgin, and Tommaso Ciampa defeated the American Wolves and BJ Whitmer. Whitmer, I guess, is kind of a heel, but kind of interesting to me was I thought Steen played like the comedy role a little bit. Did you think so?
He did. He didn't do a lot of wrestling there. Definitely the most over of the group. Well, I mean, Eddie was definitely too, but he did. He definitely did the comedy spot because they, Elgin showed off, of course, his strength, which he was a beast. And really,
what was it like a minute and a half fucking vertical suplex he held him up for?
Yeah, and then they had, I think, Ciampa repeated that spot and did like a little bit less, and then Steen came in and he was going to do it, and they like quickly reversed him. So.
Yeah. And he did a few other comedy spots as well. And I thought of anyone, he was kind of not really focused on in that match. I thought Elgin was clearly showcased.
Yes, absolutely. They definitely put him over, and he did get the pinfall.
And Eddie Edwards over like Rover in front of the Providence crowd, a local.
Yep.
I mean, Eddie Edwards' chants were ringing like the whole
night.
That
makes sense. Yeah.
So anyway, that wrapped up number 2. And I mean, we saw, what, 7 or 6 matches, and 2 were 4 to 5-star matches.
Right.
I mean, they were just phenomenal. So, again, this is another episode you're not going to want to miss the main event for, because this match, it had to be over 20 minutes, that 6-man.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It was a long match.
I'm looking at the spoilers from another site. I think it's WrestleZone. And according to this, that match was 25-36.
Yeah, it was a war. It was really fun. I mean, it didn't drag at all for 25 minutes. I mean, it cooked the whole way. And they really worked a great match, those guys. And I had a feeling none of them were going to work again that night, so because of the what they put themselves through in that one. So anyway, that wrapped up number 2. We had an intermission. To me, this is kind of the only downtime or a thing I didn't really completely enjoy in the night. I thought the intermission was too long. And I know maybe the guys need a break, and Kevin and, you know, the other announcers and stuff, but intermission had to be a good 20 minutes or so. And then they came back out and they killed some more time as they were kind of getting back together in the ring. And then Steve Corino came out, tried to do a run into commentary, but he got kicked out. And then they kind of reset again after that. So it was like 35 minutes without any matches.
Yeah, I'd say probably something around close to 30. You're probably right. But we should note that This is the time where we took advantage of where you could walk because we repositioned ourselves to sit on the Ring of Honor stage or the entrance ramp. At this point, had moved over, so you want to tell everybody about how you're probably going to be on TV until they edit you out?
Yeah, I would say the first two ones were probably not going to really be on TV much, but the last two, we may be all over these things because we went over, we're standing, because I wanted to try and catch Kevin coming out of intermission because we didn't get a chance to meet up with him Friday night, so... but, of course, the lights go out. Kevin kind of comes out with a group, and they all go right to the ring, and I don't want to bog them too much. But at that point, I'm like, you know what? Let's just stay over here. The guys behind us were kind of being annoying, and I can't sit for four and a half hours. Right. I just can't do it. So let's go stand near the apron or near the aisleway. You had a great view. So we were literally standing right on the aisle, and we got some really good pictures and videos over these last two shows. And yeah, I mean, at some points of the matches, I was sitting on the ramp on the stage. So we'll see if I'm on TV. If you see a guy in the USSR Russia shirt there, you'll know what's up. So
starting a new faction is what they're going to say.
The so episode 3 kicked off with Brian Fury defeating Vinnie Marcellia and Kongo and Todd Hansen in a 4-corner survival match to earn a TV title match later in the night in episode 4. Truth Martini did commentary here with Kevin. Brian, all these guys were local except for Kongo, obviously. Hansen was from the area, Fury was from New Hampshire, and Marcelli is actually from Rhode Island. So I thought Vinny was going to win. I was kind of surprised. But Fury's actually pretty over, and he looks pretty good. So not a bad match to open up hour three. Cedric Coleman and Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander, CNC Wrestle Factory, defeated Mike Seidel and Zizou Midox. That was the kind of a weird gimmick for these two guys. Kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to say like a teeny bopper gimmick. I don't know,
chanting Justin Bieber at one of them. Not sure who was who. And these guys had their big moment when they came out, and you got to stand behind them making a what the fuck face.
As the high crane camera swooped around. So if there's any time I may be on, this may be it. Me being like, what the fuck are these guys doing? As they're posing on the stage, I was like right next to them making faces. So I felt bad. But
no security at a Ring of Honor event. Not that we would take advantage of that, but there was.
No, I mean, and Brad, like I was telling you, I think I could have wore a Ring of Honor crew shirt or just a black Ring of Honor shirt with khakis and probably just walk down to the ring if I wanted to.
Right.
And there was just no one around. I mean, at one point, one guy came and asked us just to move to the side, but that was about it. Also, during the intermission, Brad, we should note, Nigel came out and was, or actually, it was during this opening match here. He came out and was taking notes. We didn't bug him. He ended up talking to Sean Rackin, and it was cool. It was cool to be standing there with Nigel.
Hmm. And then I pat Davey Richards. Some of those guys, you just come out and sit down, you know? I mean, you don't bug them, but right. Walked right by him.
So then... A big interview here. Nigel brought out ROH COO Joe Koff and ROH ambassador Carrie Silkin. They kicked off the tournament officially. Koff said this tournament's for the TV viewers and kicked things off. And then Joe and Carrie actually sat right by us on the opposite side for the rest of the night. Joe was kind of a cool little ambassador on behalf of Sinclair. He was walking around kind of asking fans what they thought. He was taking some pictures on his phone and seemed like a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So like Brad mentioned, kind of a big taping for them to have those guys flown in and kind of put over the show and be there involved. So
absolutely.
In the final match in this taping, Jay Lethal defeated Sanjay Dutt in the first round ROH title tournament. Lethal hit the lethal injection. A very good match. I can't say it was outstanding or fantastic or anything, but it was solid. It was a good win for Lethal, and Sanjay put on a pretty good showing.
I am impressed that Sanjay Dutt was able to wrestle because Thursday night. Well, I guess it would be 2 weeks ago. I don't know if he had healed, but in the TNA taping 2 weeks ago in Louisville, he wrestled in the Ultimate X X Division title match with Gary Marculio. I think that's what it is. Anyway, it's what's his name? Trimperetta and Manic. And, that Ultimate X, for those that don't know, is the match where you got to climb the cables. And
right.
It's pretty much a ladder match without a ladder. And he took a beating. So I'm impressed. I'm sure he's wrestled since, and Ring of Honor isn't a federation where you skate through matches. So I'm actually pretty impressed that Sanjay Dutt actually was in a big match with somebody.
Well, he had his shoulder was taped. His shoulder was taped up.
Yeah, he could, because he took a couple of pops. For those, it's that weird kind of erector set thing they build around the ring in TNA with the two cables and the X Division belt under. So he got chucked into it a few times. So I'm sure that's what the tape was for. So, but good win for Jay Lethal. Would you guys consider him one of the favorites?
No.
No?
No, I think we definitely thought he'd win. Like, it wasn't a surprise at all that he advanced, but...
That ship has sailed.
No, it's not sailed. I thought for sure he'd be done. There's just other guys that I think are more in line than him right now.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if he won at all.
Okay.
All right, Bobby Cruz then put over the crowd. This is what we were talking about earlier, saying how great it was and that they weren't just saying it, and that, you know, even the CEO and everyone else was impressed talking about backstage. And I got to back it up. I mean, I've been in front of crowds before. I'll get home and be like, oh, it sounded louder there. If this thing ain't loud on TV, then they're doing something wrong, because it was like fucking ear-splitting at times.
They did do one thing wrong, though. Maybe we can talk about it now. So, you know, you have the seats around. They know where the hard camera is going to be. And, you know, I would say that it was probably evenly dispersed to start. But that side that the camera, you know, the camera's facing had a couple more rows than what the side ones did, just because it's almost like a rectangle conference room, right? So they know the camera's going to be there. And so at this point, with episode 4 about to start, you know, they put over the crowd, and then they're like, if you want to move over to this side, go ahead. Because it was a little bit sparse, but I mean, the crowd on that you can't see was really the loudest. So I don't, you know, it should be loud on TV, but they're going to look at the crowd and be like, eh. The guys that were more excited were probably sitting in our original section, which is right of the camera.
And they had guys, they had security, like, bringing people over to fill the seats even before they announced it.
Right.
And I agree with you, though, Brad. I don't know why they don't sell tickets for that side first. And this is something we can ask Kevin, too, is why not sell tickets over there and then fill that side and then move along to the other sides? You know, make sure that the camera side is full.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is, like, you know, like, there's $50 seats that are up close on all four sides. So, you know, they definitely want to get that money.
Right, but I mean, we bought seventh row tickets. You know why? We didn't have to be in that section. Right. And our rows are full. Just odd. And if you're going to fill it, I'd say do it early when everyone's kind of really into it. By the fourth hour, everyone's just kind of like, they're into the show, but they don't really feel getting up and walking over and moving, you know? Everyone's just kind of settled into where they are by that point. Mm. So, episode 4 kicked off with that TV title match we mentioned earlier. Matt Taven knocked off Brian Fury. Taven with a headlock DDT. A lot of interference from Truth and whatnot. The hotties on this evening were probably straight out of Club Fantasies. They did a little shimmy on the stage. We got that on video. Yeah, I thought Fury looked fine. I thought he was okay here, but Taven just still doesn't do it for me. He just always looks like he's... And maybe that's the intent of the gimmick, is that because he's always getting helped and everything else, but he just always looks a little out of sorts to me. Like, he never gets in a flow in his matches.
I haven't seen enough of his matches to gather. I mean, we saw him the match back in April, but... I never really kind of noticed that, but maybe it is the gimmick. I don't know. What do you think, Brad? What would you gather from it?
Actually, I was taking a piss during this match, and then I was also following Kerry Silken around the arena, because we ended up like walking next to each other all the way around. But I mean, the heat wasn't, you know, for him. I mean, Justin's written about it before at placetobenation.com in his Ring of Honor report. So he just doesn't. Nobody seems to really be buying it, and they got a lot of stuff around them to kind of try to get it over. But yeah, nothing great there. Fury was pretty popular, though. He had quite the vocal crowd for him.
Yeah, a lot of people that obviously knew him. There was a lot of Brian Fury shirts in the crowd. So, yeah, kind of maybe sad John wasn't there. I would like to put him over there if we could have. Michael Elgin came out. Said Nigel's Elgin originally was supposed to be handed the vacant title since he was a normal contender, but he told Nigel that, you know, the best way to do it is not this way, not to hand it over. So that's why they have in the tournament. Elgin said the field has to worry about him, not the other way around. Steen came out, Mike Bennett came out, then Ciampa came out, and they were all fighting and arguing, and the official separated everyone. The highlight here was Maria standing right near us and just smoking hot. Machine Gun Carl Anderson defeated ACH in the first round Ring of Honor title tournament. Solid match. Big pop for Anderson. Crowd was into him. Again, maybe I'm just not seeing his best stuff. But, you know, at this point, it's hard for me to judge these last couple of matches. I was really, really burnt by this point. 4 hours of taping is a long time. As good as the matches are, regardless, you know, especially when you ate what we ate for lunch, Brad. I was hurt by 11 o'clock. And that intermission kind of drained me a little bit. And then, you know, that interview segment, maybe something they could have taped earlier and then air it later in the night. It didn't really spoil anything. So I think that long promo they could have done, do that during intermission, you know what I mean? Or do it some other time and not here before the two main event matches. I thought maybe that killed things as well. So the main event, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, this was pretty good, you know, big man, little guy, you know, ECH was flying around. And, you know, I thought maybe they would put him over there, but it looks like Anderson's going to probably be on some additional tapings now. That was kind of what our friend Mark Poirier was telling me when I was asking him what he thought was going to happen and go down there. You know, I don't really see too much with Anderson either, although his machine gun gimmick thing was getting over. But I think probably most of his best work is probably over in Japan with Prince Devitt.
Of course, anyone who works with Prince Devitt is their best work. All right, in the main event, the final match of the evening was another tournament match between Adam Cole and Mark Briscoe. Briscoe was still working the concussion angle, so as the match kind of wore on, he was kind of shaking his head, holding his head, and then at the end, the referee was checking on him. Francis from Pee Wee's Big Adventure was checking on him. And he was down on his knees, and Cole pretty much officially sealed his heel turn. He went up and gave him a Shining Wizard to the face, just a really stiff kick, and then finished him with a J-Driller, actually, and added a little insult to injury and advanced to the next round.
Good catch with that. I mean, that was pretty much like, it's probably a shame for them that Del Rio and Ziggler did like the same kind of ending
right.
2 months ago, because and then Triple H did the concussion angle before that, because it was very similar to that, but certainly a good way to put Cole over as a heel, especially doing the J-Driller then.
And then Nigel told Mark to get checked out, and someday he'd be back once he was healthy and not to hurt himself anymore. So you really wonder if that was the official writing off of the Briscoes or not. We'll see. Mark said he's still reading that they're leaving and going to developmental. I haven't really seen anything else, and maybe this is something, again, we'll check in with Kevin and see if there's any updates since the last time we talked to him. It was pretty funny because we were standing by the aisle, so Briscoe was kind of stumbling around, and like some fan got in his face, and he was like going all crazy, and then he collapsed and had this crazy look at his face, and it's pretty cool to see him act a little bit for the live crowd.
Right.
At that point, Kevin came by, was able to grab him, and jumped up on the stage. We got a picture. I chatted with him for a couple minutes, and pretty cool to meet Kevin. Nice to him after a long 4.5-hour taping, and really a long day Friday night and a long day Saturday for them to spend a few minutes bullshitting was cool to him, so... That was the overall taping. What was your match of the night, Brad?
Yeah, I would definitely say the six man. That was definitely one that, and even our friend Andy Flanagan, we were really into it. He and I, you know, it was kind of my first event for them. So seeing all those guys, it was pretty cool. That was definitely a great match, a good showcase of Ring of Honor, and kind of how they're going to position things for the fall. You know, they're moved past the scum thing now, so they put out these great matches. Talk about the tag team. The tag team match is really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to pick between both of those, but they're definitely worth seeking out. And I thought all the title tournament matches were certainly worthy. Nobody dogged it. There wasn't a bad one in there.
So I would definitely say the first 2 weeks are more than worth checking out if you can see them either online or on TV. Definitely check those out. Brad, would you go to another Ring of Honor show based off of this experience?
I would, and I don't think it's going to be as good of an experience, so I'm maybe let down, but I will most likely go to Death Before Dishonor, which is in Philadelphia in September, and that's where they will actually have the end of this tournament. So one of their video on demands, right, because they don't do the iPay-per-view anymore.
Right.
So Place to Be Nation may have may have live coverage for you before anybody else really gets it out there.
Very nice, just like we kind of did tonight. So after that, we headed across the street back to Trinity, met up with Jen Angle and her friends for about an hour, killed some time, kind of sobered up a little, tried to buy Mark Poirier some time before he went back to the airport. We dropped poor Mark. Oh, first we dropped Andy off in the middle of Olneyville. He wandered off into the darkness.
Hey, did he make it? You talked to him the next day?
Oh, I saw him,
I was a little worried. Some people were, like, converging in on him. And I'm like, should we wait and see if
he makes
it?
The darkness.
When I talked to him the next morning, I'm like, oh, we were worried. He's like, yeah, you guys look concerned as I was walking out. But, I mean, obviously he lives in the area, so I think he's used to... anything that's going down over there. So I believe it's a prostitute he walked by. I'm not sure.
It's just really rare for someone to yell 50 yards away from you if you have a lighter while you're driving. You know, that seems like what are they really interested in, or what do they have like in their pocket? So then Andy then she started to converge in on him. Do you think we should wait and see if he's...
Nah, let's just get on the highway.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
It's already late enough. So we dropped Poirier off at the airport. I mean, fuck, it had to be, what, almost 1 at this point? A little after 1:15 maybe. Dropped him off. He wandered off into the darkness of TF Green Airport. And Brad and I returned home to Coventry. Passed out around 2. Pretty early the next morning. Probably up around 8 or so. Got ready. Brought Brad to the airport. Said goodbye. It's very sad. And then I met Mr. Flanagan.
Goodbye. Until next time.
Until next time. You're right. Say goodnight, not goodbye. I met Mr. Flanagan at the mall. I had to go to the Apple store. And we're walking in, and who do we run into? Mr. Bobby Fish. I was like, holy shit, Bobby Fish, what's up? And at first, he didn't hear me, but I thought he was blowing me off and doing the I don't know who that is kind of thing, but he just didn't hear what I said. And I said, oh, you know, can we get a picture? I said, you guys had a great match last night. A really, really, really courteous guy. Took a picture with us, and we were bullshit a little bit. I guess he was there for some cupcake place that he heard about on Howard Stern or something. He wanted to check out. He ran over to check that out. And so we talked to him on the way up a little bit and just kind of talked about his trip home and all that. So really nice guy, really down to earth and very, very well spoken, that's for sure. So, Brad, I did find out that those guys were all at the Providence Place Mall eating the night before. So maybe we missed our window. Maybe we should have went there.
At Uno's? Yeah. Or where? Oh, really?
Well, I don't know if it was Uno's. They just said we came here to get something to eat, he said. So it might have even been the food court. I don't know. But maybe we should have went there instead of Trinity for dinner. You live and you learn, like Alanis Morissette once said. So, all right. So that wraps up the weekend in general and our Ring of Honor trip. So why don't we take a quick break, fellas? And we'll come back and kind of do more of a proper headline show. And then we'll hit some trivia.
Because?
I think that was like the fourth word Scott said so far. It's a record.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever. But what about David Crockett?
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, twfnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at twfnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. If you're on the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
And welcome back.
Hey, that's my gig.
Well, you've already passed your word quota for the evening.
You're right. I'm ready to pass out.
Now, welcome back to the Place B podcast. Scott Criscolo, Justin Rosero, and Mr. Brad Woodling talking about your boys' journey through Northern Rhode Island and the Ring of Honor show. I wanted to say something, JR, but you were on a match roll, so I didn't want to interrupt you. But you were talking about Machine Gun Anderson. You don't even know who he is.
Carl Anderson or Ken Anderson?
Even when we saw him at Supercard in April, Mania weekend, when he fought Roderick Strong, we were like, you know, this guy's from Japan. He's a big stud, you know, big, well-known guy. And even that match is a little shaky. I wonder if he's not used to the different way of doing things here because he's been over there so long, you know, because he goes back and forth. So because you even said that his matches sometimes haven't hit that run that you would think he'd have. So I don't know if he's going to stick around for a while or we'll see what happens. But in any event, I'm glad you all had a wonderful weekend. I'm glad you, Brad, went to the Lakeside Arena.
Mm-hmm.
You have not seen the run of the Great Lone Star yet, so you think WCF's awesome now.
I'm gonna dub stuff for Brad and Chad. I'm gonna send it their way for them to enjoy.
Right, should know too. You know, we tried to get into the indoor Lakeside Arena, but they must have had some event that they were catering later on because it was locked. We just stalked around the building and could not get inside of it. But of course, the outdoor is
open to the public.
You know what you need to see, Brad? Soon, my soon-to-be-published WCF match write-ups and grades.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to it, man. Definitely.
Yes. Max Flyer, Sexy Steve match. My opinion, the Savage Steamboat of WCF.
So now, Brad, you expressed interest in joining us for one of our interviews later in the month.
We're
going to announce those interview subjects at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. We have two big interviews coming up. So this is going to be a test for you, sir. We are currently analyzing your performance over these headlines.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the episode, we're going to give you a performance review.
That's fair. And just so the audience knows, I asked earlier, are there any particular headlines I should catch up on? And was told no. So I will be going in blind. And I will have to rely on the recaps that I've read at placetobenation.com because I've been traveling a lot the last 3 weeks, so I have not watched a lot of wrestling.
I don't know, man. I don't know. She's just acting real funky.
All right. So, headline, Scott, lead us off. What do you want to talk about? What's going on in the world of wrestling?
I'm
going to
talk about your girl that you were hot and bothered over on Saturday night, Ms. Maria Kanellis. She apparently took offense to WWE. The official WWE website currently has a poll up asking fans which former diva they would most like to see return to the company. Not listed among the choices was your girl, Maria, who has claimed in recent weeks through Twitter that the Bella Twins blocked her from returning to the organization earlier this year. Despite not being listed in the poll, she acknowledged it on Twitter. Awesome. At WWE, I'm with Ring of Honor now. She then stated she voted for Victoria in the poll, who, of course, is right now unemployed as she was let go by TNA. Meanwhile, she was live tweeting during Total Divas. last night.
I'm curious if they'll use this poll to actually bring anyone back.
I don't see why they wouldn't bring Victoria back.
Well, just whoever wins. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Total Divas. Didn't watch it yet. I actually ended up DVRing the replay because I read so much about it. I actually got a really good rating. Did very well. And I actually read some positive reviews about it.
Apparently
some negative as well. But
yeah. Apparently it was the highest rated e-debut show in over a year.
Yeah, anything non-Kardashian division.
Well, that's for sure. What have you read about it, Brad? So far,
we're going to read more about it from Ben Morris and Jen Engel. We have it completely covered from both the male and female point of view on Place to Be Nation later this week. It's interesting you brought up that poll. I can't agree that WWE should have hitched their wagon to the Bellas over Maria, especially after she went on The Apprentice and really put over the company. Like, I thought she showed pretty well there. But the only thing I've heard about the show so far was that people were surprised. They thought this was risque because it was exposing that John Cena was in a relationship. I guess for the common fan, they wouldn't know that he was actually intertwined with these girls and these twins here. So that's all I've heard so far. I've not seen it, but it is on the DVR because we do our homework here at Place to Be Nation.
I'm guessing they're going to work that in to the SummerSlam match in some level. They have to.
I would think so.
I don't want them to, but I'm guessing they're going to.
All right, the other big news making the rounds this weekend apparently is the tour WWE is doing in Australia, New Zealand, and over that area of the world. Of course, as we know, tonight's Raw that's going on at the moment is taped. Main Event and SmackDown were taped last week for this week, so because they're overseas. And apparently, guys, tour's not going great from an incidentals perspective. Crowd is good. The match has apparently been good, but apparently the sets have been very kind of lazy, haphazard, nothing fancy, and the merchandise situation is atrocious. People are getting in line, long lines, and they keep getting told that the only t-shirt sizes are youth. And 80% of the merchandise is John Cena. And he's like, oh, fuck you, buy the Cena shit, asshole.
Listen up, Michael McDonald, buy the shirt I give you.
And here's another issue. Prior to a tables match against John Cena at the WWE event yesterday in Brisbane, Ryback angrily confronted a fan holding a sign reading, quote, "Feed me more roids." The WWE superstar went on verbal outburst toward the fan, reportedly said he would fucking see him outside. Additionally, he ordered security to confiscate the sign. The ordeal occurred as Cena was making his entrance to the ring. Ryback also acknowledged the taboo subject the day before at a WWE live event in Sydney as he goaded ringside fans chanting, guess what? Goldberg.
Goldberg, yeah.
But the key thing apparently is this merchandise situation. And you know, we've been to plenty of live WWE shows over the years. And I've never been a big fan of a lot of stuff they put out. They don't put enough t-shirts in all sizes. That's a common problem they've had for years.
That was a big problem at WrestleMania too, Scott.
Yes.
Especially for those of us that waited till afterwards, and it looked like they had like a ton of shirts left, but like they had no larges left, which is a pretty common size.
No, not for that crowd.
Well, it's funny because buddy, Mr. Armento, he went. Oh, he was going to stand in line at that. He was going to stand in line at that. Whatever that big fucking
was he trying to buy a hat? Because I would be.
I mentioned that as well, but I didn't want him to get burned. But instead, he went to the trailer thing that was in front of our section where the PTB tailgate was going to commence. And he got the "I was there" shirt, which was a fit. But I was seeing people who had the shirt I was wearing, which was the CM Punk knees to faces. And the guy goes, "Well, we only have two sizes." Youth, large, and 4XL.
It also comes in members-only jacket.
Exactly, yes. Yes. And he would, you know what? I could see him wearing that. I got to let him know this. I could see him wearing those mid-90s jean jackets with the big, you know, the big logo on the back that was, what, $80? There probably were Razor jackets. But, merchandise, though, has always been a problem. Even back in the old days in the late 80s for the five-hour Superstars tapings, there was always merchandise issues. I remember standing in line for when we went to Raw last year, and I wanted the Sheamus, before I started hating him, the Sheamus Bro Kick Hooligans shirt. And, again, they had small and 5XL. And I said to the guy, I said, "What is wrong with you?" I seriously said to the guy, "What is wrong with you guys? Really?" I mean, how many of those sizes do you see? And then I turned and I saw it and I said, "All right, well, never mind. I'll pass." But, Brad, do you have any merchandise horror stories in your journeys as a wrestling fan and show participant?
I've got a couple things. So the "I was there" t-shirts at WrestleMania, they definitely go fast because we were looking for those after the show and they were definitely gone. Yeah. I read a Raw report from the one in Texas a couple weeks ago, and the reporter, Brandon Stroud, was saying that they actually had two merch setups, one that was like Cena, Orton, Sheamus, and then another one tucked away that was like all Daniel Bryan shirts and CM Punk. So now on these tours, I'm sure they don't have, you know, four of them around a bigger arena out there, but at the Raw table. But I thought it was pretty interesting that they actually had it kind of set by like casual younger fan, and then maybe a fan that was more into the product that was looking for Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and Cesaro and those guys. So
right,
my cock, I'll murder your family.
That's what he said when I asked for the Sheamus shirt.
Well, and now so you would have been pretty embarrassed, Scott, if you got that Sheamus t-shirt and now you wore it, right? So,
yeah.
Well, I guess I should ask you first. Would you still
yes, I would. Because it was a cool shirt. It was a cool shirt. Because he was still a mushy baby face at that point, but he didn't irritate me as much as he has the last, you know.
Well, I have one shirt right now that's absolutely unwearable, and it pains me to say it, but like, you know, back in 2010, Big Miz fan, you know, the "Hello, I'm Awesome" shirt. His face stuff is so bad that it doesn't make its way out of the bottom of the drawer. So that's one that I definitely would not be wearing. And I can't imagine from your Raw recaps that I read every week that you would be wearing that one either.
Scott, you know what sucked about the Ring of Honor shirts? They're all black. All of them.
Yeah.
Ugh. You know what's becoming a new, and I'm bummed, is that they're not doing one shirt color that's been prevalent now that I wish Ring of Honor would use more is like that charcoal gray.
Right.
And Ring of Honor would have some cool shirts if they use that more often, but I agree with you. That's just black has been such a prevalent color in all these other promotions. I tell you something. Speaking of merchandise, I can kind of see how TNA seems to be struggling because they give shit away, and there are guys like we always thought that like Stone Cold and these guys all had James Storm and Angle and I mean AJ Styles have like 11 T-shirts. It's crazy, and they pump them out like every 3 weeks. They're wearing a new T-shirt. At least Stone Cold let a shirt go for about 3 months before getting a new one. They're pumping shirts out like crazy. And so I think merchandise-wise, WWE is not as I think it's a whole house show philosophy still. It's like, no one goes anyway, so fuck it. Why are we going to put the good stuff out?
No, I hope that's not true because that's stupid.
Yeah. It is stupid. I agree. But clearly, every time we've all been to a live show, the merchandise situation is usually pretty hideous. So,
yeah, I don't go to a lot of house shows, so it must be the overall situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even the Raw tapings, pretty bad as well. So,
which is weird. It's such a moneymaker for them.
Yeah, yeah.
They should have a whole. They do things so stupidly. You know what I mean? It's so stupid. Like, there's so many avenues where they could be making so much more money with things. Like, why don't they have a DVD booth set up? There's a big DVD booth. I mean, could that cost that much extra to throw a bunch of DVDs in the back of the truck?
Right.
Set up a booth with a TV airing the latest DVD, and you sell them all. That's like Ring of Honor. They had a table full of DVDs, and Brad bought four of them. There you go.
I don't know.
I mean, I might pick up the War Games DVD if I'm tempted. It's sitting there in Blu-ray for $25. I might grab it, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm in the mood. You're in the wrestling mode. Your mindset's there. Like, oh, yeah, I could go for more wrestling when I get home. Why not? Stupid. Stupid things.
Yes, absolutely. There was a WWE.com video of John Bradshaw Layfield revealing he has a major announcement planned for when he reaches the summit of Mount Blanc, which he began climbing yesterday. Quote, the Seven Summits quest continues. This Sunday, meaning yesterday, I'm going to Switzerland to climb Mount Blanc, the highest mountain in the Alps, not actually the highest mountain in Europe. So I'm using this as practice for the big one coming up in a few years, Mount Everest. All money raised goes to help at-risk kids. SevenSummitsForKids.com. Thanks to WWE. 100% of that money will go to help them. He continues, I'm not only going to plant a WWE flag at the summit, I also have quite the announcement I plan to make at the top of the Alps.
You don't think he's going to come back, do you? Come back and wrestle? Obviously, he's going to come back for the mountain. But.
I don't think the flag's going to... He'll put the flag down, and the guy behind him, like he turns to go down, I'll pull the flag out and throw it down the mountain.
I don't think he's going to come back.
I wanted to stay in the booth. I don't think he needs to wrestle again. I don't know what else it could be. Nope, he's not quitting. I mean, I don't think he'd announce that. He's retiring. It's going to be a comeback match of some sort. What else would it be his major announcement?
Yeah. Maybe he's pumping something up for Mania. Maybe he's going to set himself up for a Mania
Or
maybe run,
he's say he's entering the Rumble.
Get in the Rumble and have something set up.
Hopefully it's just something like that and not any kind of full-time thing. So a little bit of we get the MLB trade, not to radically switch, but we get the MLB trade deadline coming up Wednesday. Not a lot of action so far. Lou Maloney causing a little bit of a stir here in New England. Retweeted some guy named Rich Smith, All Sports Intel, and I never heard of this guy. Claims to be an inside rumor guy. There's rumors that the Phillies and Red Sox are working on two versions of a Cliff Lee trade. One is just Lee, and the other one has Michael Young involved as well. Now, not to get you too worked up here, Brad, I don't know if this is legitimate or not, but...
Well, I like how, you know, it's the bigger deal that would be harder to get would be Michael Young, who has a one-year deal and should be the first guy they trade. But, Lee's been certainly solid. He's obviously younger than Holiday, who still has to come back from injury. But they still have Hamels, who who's had a down year too. I would be a little disappointed that they traded him. He's, you know, he had a bad record last year, but his skills were certainly consistent, and you know, he likes the area. But I'm glad that they're exploring those things, because of course, you know, Utley's not available. They announced that today. I don't know if it's official, but that was like the heavy rumor that they're telling teams they can't get him. He's a free agent after this year. They'll probably re-sign him so he can play with them through his age 44 season.
Well, like I told my friend Eric today, I'm like, if you can't fleece Ruben Amaro, you're not trying. So
just dangle somebody that's, you know, in the twilight of his career that had, like, you know, a homer binge the last 2 weeks.
So we'll see if there's anything to this, or if it's just one of those, like, fake Incarcerated Bob level rumor mongers.
Who did they say the Red Sox were going to give up? You guys still have Lars Anderson?
First of all, there's no you guys. There's no you guys here.
I'm sorry.
Lars Anderson's been dead in the water for like 5 years now.
The New England area was not literally pulling you into that.
Literally, he's in a lake.
It was my friend Eric says it's Cecchini and Bradley, who I'm not sure either of those guys are, but I know it's not their top
Jackie
guys.
Jackie Bradley. He was the guy they had up in the beginning of the year.
Oh, that Bradley. Okay. Yeah, he'd be a pretty good guy. I mean, that's pretty good. But if they're not getting Bogarts, he's like their main. Yeah. Top, I don't think they'll trade him. So
the other
guy
that's been highly talked about because he's pretty much moving around with his luggage is Jake Peavy.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction: he's going to the Cardinals. What do you think, JR?
Well, the rumor around here was the Red Sox as well, but obviously, if they get Lee, forget that. I wonder if they get Lee, if the Orioles will step up and maybe grab Peavy. Now, I said in the Return of the Hack, if you read that on PlaceDomination.com. I called the Cliff Lee to Boston thing way back when.
Yeah.
I thought that was a no-brainer. I think Baltimore is out to lunch if they don't try and get Cliff Lee. I mean, this is a team that's been moribund and dead for over a decade plus. They finally turned things around. They have a hot run into the playoffs last year. And this year, the East is down a little bit. I mean, Detroit's good. The A's are good. There's no great team. If Baltimore got Cliff Lee with that lineup and the rest of that staff and bullpen, man, I'm telling you, I think they become prohibitive AL favorites.
Yeah, so. Certainly, you know, with Detroit, I mean, Oakland has a great record. I'm not sure. You know, Oakland was heavy in on PB, too. They were the favorite as of yesterday, and now the White Sox today are throwing around that they're probably going to hold on to him.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, it's smart for a team like that to keep a guy that's due $30 million over the next 2 years. But he's actually had a pretty good stuff the last 2 years since he came back from his shoulder injury. So somebody's going to get pretty good starter there. So,
and the A's are confident, it sounds that way, that Colon's not going to get suspended because he's already been suspended for failing a test. Well, I guess they're saying he's already been punished for this thing pretty much. So anyway, that's how they feel. Or maybe I misread him. Maybe they meant this year. Maybe he'll appeal or whatever. But
Right.
I'll be curious if the Braves maybe make a move, but they're getting some guys back now, even though Hudson's done for the year. They're getting Beachy back. And then
they may make a play for Peavy.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, but they might want to wait and maybe go to the waiver wire instead to see what they got over this next month or so.
Mm.
It'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting deadline. On the Yankee front, I'm not sure what they're going to do. They're kind of in a weird spot right now.
They already got Soriano.
He had a big game yesterday. Yeah.
I love that deal for them. You know, they somehow conned the Cubs they only have to pay the Cubs $5 million of his salary next year, which is what, like 24 or something ridiculous?
$7 million, I think
it's
like $7 million.
Something like that. Oh, and then they gave up.
Still a good deal.
They gave up a guy with some talent, but he's a profile to be a bullpen guy. So, I mean, you give that up every day of the week if you think Soriano can help. And Soriano will be around for next year, too. And he's already back, kind of got a flair for the dramatic. Obviously, that big game yesterday with Jeter homering on the first pitch he saw, which is just, I mean, how do you write that shit, you know? It's, like, it's amazing.
No.
It'll be interesting down the stretch. You know, I thought the Red Sox were going to be pretty good, and they have been. I thought Tampa was going to be very good, and they have been. The only team I kind of missed out on was Baltimore. I didn't really think they were going to carry over to this year, but they have. The NL, you know, Pittsburgh's still staying alive, which is pretty cool to see. Mm-hmm. Hoping they can hang in. St. Louis, obviously, the Giants have fallen apart. The Dodgers have surged. So the Yankees go out there tomorrow night for 2 games, and then they head to San Diego. So it'll be interesting there. How have the Padres been doing? Actually, I haven't checked out the.
I think they're lower than the.
They're lower than the Giants.
Yeah, they're in last place.
Right, because they were doing pretty well for a while, right?
Yeah, yeah. If it's Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Giants, Padres, I think that's the West.
Right. So, you know, one thing you hinted on, we talked about Baltimore. You know, remember Tampa Bay has the best record in the last 2 months. They're really surging right now, too. So between Baltimore, them, and Boston could be in a little trouble if they don't make a deal like Cliff Lee.
Yeah, if they don't get – they need a pitcher. They need Lee or Peavy. Right. They need Lee or Peavy, I think.
Because Buchholz could be – he's out at least a month.
And Lester's not been that great. I mean, Lackey's been their best pitcher. Dempster's been terrible. And DuPont's hit or miss. And their bullpen is kind of shaky, too. I mean, they've gotten this far on their bats with some last-minute kind of heroics. So they're in position. I think it's going to come down to if one of those two teams can land Lee. I think that's going to swing things. I haven't seen Baltimore at all reference for Lee, but...
Yeah, there were some talks because there were some rumors they were going to trade Dylan Bundy, who's their big pitcher, but he had to go under Tommy John. But then they said they weren't going to trade him, but that would be a chip that they would probably have to dangle.
If they... If I were them, and, I mean, I know it's tough to give up a guy like that, cost control.
I would give him up in a heartbeat.
If you're getting Cliff Lee...
Blacks fly forever, man.
Yeah, and if you're getting Cliff Lee in this year... For a team that has been that bad and you're in the middle of this hot, hot run, man, I would do it. I would not look at you. All you can do is look across town for their answer. I mean, look at last year. The Nats held back Strasburg because of the innings limit. They figured they'd be back again this year. And now they've been terrible. So it can turn on a dime. And, you know, even look at the Yankees. I think we were talking about this. You look at the Yankees back in 2010. They didn't pull the trigger on Cliff Lee. They held on to their prospects, Montero and Nunez. And so they didn't complete that trade, and they ended up losing that year and figuring, oh, you know, we're built, and you know what? They haven't been. They haven't been back close since. They bowed out in the playoffs each time early on. So, you know, an opportunity like that to get a guy, sometimes you just got to – if you think you're a legitimate contender, sometimes you got to pull the trigger and do it.
Always. Yeah, any of those guys that complain about those trades, that stuff's forgotten 3 days later. It's
right.
Like people complaining about – people getting snubbed in an All-Star game. No one gives a shit, and they forget about it by the next Thursday. So,
I mean, there were people complaining about this guy that the Yankees gave up for Soriano, and I was like, really? I mean, you know, come on. They needed a bat. The Yankees needed power. They needed right-handed power, and they got it. So, all right, Scott, one other thing I wanted to talk about here is the announcement of a new Rocky movie.
Yes.
Kind of a Rocky movie. I'm very excited about this. Because, you know, me and you are both big Rocky marks.
Yes, we are.
And this one's going to be a little bit different twist, though. This is going to feature the grandson of Apollo Creed getting into the sweet science. And he's going to be trained and managed by Rocky himself. Sly Stallone will be reprising the role. And the really good news is the guy who's playing the young Creed is Michael B. Jordan from Friday Night Lights, from Parenthood, from The Wire. Really talented young actor. He's been in some big movies lately as well. And he's really good, so I have hope for this thing. I liked Rocky Balboa. I think Rocky itself, the story still endears. And I think if you add Jordan and his Creed and put a different slant, I think it could work.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Friday Night Lights in a while. I'm going to watch it again on Netflix. I love the first season. Is he Juice? Michael B. Jordan?
Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
He's
Was he Juice?
I can never remember his damn name. He was the quarterback at the end.
Oh, okay. Okay, then I don't know him because I only watched the first season and a half.
Oh, yeah, no, he's not in the early ones. He's in the,
okay.
He's in the last... No, he's not Juice. He's in the last two when they go to... when they split the Dillons up and they go to the East and the West.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I got to catch up and watch that. I watched the first season and a half. I loved it.
He's
great
really
show.
Good in that, and he is really good in Parenthood. He was excellent.
Ah,
and he was in The Wire, too, right?
Yeah, he was in The Wire. Yes, he was. He was in The Wire as Wallace
that.
For 13 episodes. Friday Night Lights, he was Vince Howard.
Mm. That's right.
And then for movies, he was in Fruitvale Station, which is getting a lot of publicity as well. He was in was it Chronicle? Was that no? Was the one with the was that the one where they were like the superpowers? What was that movie? Yeah, Chronicle was the one.
Yeah,
he was one of the guys. He could like whatever. They had four guys who got radioactive powers or whatever. Mm. Anyway, he's a good young actor, and I think he'll be pretty good in this.
Yes, I was actually, this was brought up to me by our man, Dr. G, also a big Rocky mark. And, yeah, I'm excited about it. I think you're right, JR. I think the story never gets old as long as it's written right. Let's hope that he doesn't turn to another Tommy Gunn because that was a debacle. And enough about his kid. Okay. I think that was what ultimately killed Rocky V and the first quarter of Rocky Balboa. Was they tried? I don't know what Sly tried to write his kid in. His kid's a puss bag, and there was really no way to fucking do anything about it. He was a little wimp in the fifth one, Although Rocky Five,
I didn't mind him in Rocky Balboa though.
He was okay in Rocky Balboa, but you grew to like him as the movie progressed. But Rocky Five was just.
But you could kind of get it in Rocky Balboa. Like I thought it was believable why he was acting the way he was.
Right.
I'm curious how much Sly is going to be in this thing. If it's just going to be like a couple scenes, just the training, or if he's going to be like the whole time in the movie. I'm kind of curious.
Are they bringing back Duke?
I don't know. It says, in July 3rd, 2013, Jordan was announced to portray the grandson of Apollo Creed in the spinoff Creed with Ryan Coogler and Sylvester Stallone. Let's see if there's any other information on the movie itself. Yeah, Tony Duke Evers. Oh, no, wait. This is just major characters in the Rocky movies.
Oh, yeah. Because Duke, of course, was Apollo's manager.
And this is a film focused on a young man following in the footsteps of his grandfather and getting a mentor in the now-retired Rocky Balboa. Michael B. Jordan has been offered the role. Stallone reprised the character of Rocky. Script co-written by Coogler and Aaron Covington. So, I'm interested. I'm excited for it.
Yes, very much so. Right in your wheelhouse, Mr. Woodling. Right in your backyard.
Yes, absolutely. You have to all check out the steps one time and check out the statue. So,
where is the statue right now?
Well, it's at the Art Museum.
It's still the Art Museum?
Yeah. Because
when I was in Philly, God, back in the mid-90s, it was in front of the Spectrum.
It's by the Art Museum now,
It's back at the Art Museum? Okay.
We all miss the Spectrum, though. Some good stuff there.
Oh, of course. Legendary place for many, many things. Sixers and awesome house shows. Indeed. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. This new movie. When's it due out? What'd you say, 2014, next year?
It just said it was announced in 2013.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll probably be late next year. I bet it's like, they like to put that shit around Christmas for Rocky. I bet it'll be next Christmas, would be my guess. Rocky Balboa came out at the very end of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Carl Weathers, did they reach out to him at all? I mean, he's still
going. He's dead.
Carl Weathers or Creed?
Creed.
Yeah, but they might do that. I bet they'll do
a montage type thing.
They could do flashbacks.
They'll cut back. I mean. Yeah, I bet they'll cut back to him. Although he wouldn't have had a grandson in the movie, so maybe they'll cut back to him and his dad or something. I don't know. Because he never, I mean, his kids were little in the movie, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have an older son or with a grandson at the time.
Never knew him, so. Right. Yeah.
I'm sure he'll show up in some shape or form.
I'm sure there'll be a touching scene where, you know, Rocky's with him and they're in Rocky's house and you see the red, white, and blue tights, the red, white, and blue, boxing shorts and all the picture. You know, maybe they'll have that big Leroy Neiman painting of the two of them matching punches at the end of Rocky III. And I'm sure there'll be some cool touching scene and Carl Weathers will probably be in it. So, very quickly, one more story because it kind of relates to Bradley. WWE is currently shopping for a city to hold WrestleMania 31. Cities are currently making bids to the company and having WWE executive John Saber out to hear the proposals. Of course, Cowboy Stadium in Arlington is a big one. But The Observer, Mr. Meltzer, claims that Saber was in San Jose regarding the city's bid. I don't know what their outdoor building would be.
It would be the new Niners Stadium.
The new Niners. I thought that was in Santa Clara. I guess it's the same
thing. It is. So maybe they fucked up. It's definitely the one in the running.
Yeah. But you know where WrestleMania 32 might be? There's rumors. I've read at other places, Mr. Woodling. In your living room.
It would be amazing. AKA the Link. Like eight.
Yes. Sure. But rumors are the Link could be hosting WrestleMania 32.
We'll all be
sleeping on your floor.
You will. We will have guaranteed. Fresh off the success at MetLife Stadium. I'm glad they're looking at more places in the East here. It's a big stadium. It holds probably about the same. I think actually MetLife may hold a little bit more, but certainly more outdoors there.
Awesome.
Speaking of baseball, the Red Sox, look, they just got hosed. They pulled David Price because they had like a 30-minute rain delay. Sox come in, they get a double off the wall, and then another long double, but the guy at second had to hold up because it looks like the right fielder might have gotten it. So they held at second and third, just did a sack fly, but I think it was Nava coming home, got thrown out, but he looked safe to me, so and the ump called him out. So we'll see in the replay. But big game here tonight for the Sox and Rays battling for first place in this makeup game.
Yes.
For the nine of you that care. Okay, so Bradley, as we mentioned, I think he was safe. Bradley, as we mentioned, we're going to give you a performance report here. We're going to judge how you did, and that'll determine if you come on. But first, we're going to hear a little trivia. Then we'll come back, determine that, and we'll announce who our next two interview guests will be. So, Scott, our first Elite Eight trivia matchup, who we got?
Our first Elite Eight trivia matchup is the miracle worker himself, Mr. Steve Willie, taking on the other Connecticut native, Mr. Pfeff.
So the question, Scott and Brad, Willie or won't he? We'll find out as soon as this is over. All right, Nation, we are back with our first Elite Eight matchup here. Scott, we're down to the final eight in the PTB Nation Trivia Tournament for 2013. That's quite the eclectic group we have. We've got some favorites, some underdogs. It's a nice mix.
Mm-hmm.
Some new guys.
Yes.
So why don't we kick things off? We'll bring in, of course, one of our original. Well, actually, you know what? These are both OGs. But let's bring in the guy who was here last year. Had advanced around, and here he's in the Elite Eight, Mr. Austin Pfaff. Mr. Pfaff, how are you?
Pretty good.
All right, you ready or what?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And ready to win.
And his opponent, no one expected him to be here, but he is here. Started from the bottom, now he's here. Of course, Mr. Steve Willie. Steve, how you doing?
Good. I didn't expect to be here, I have to be honest.
I know you didn't. That's why we are very happy. This is a great matchup. You guys have both done fairly well. You've also had a little bit of luck when it comes to the numbers game here in the tournament so far. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that continues. So, Scott, why don't you tell us who's up first?
Okay. And also, just as a recap, we already mentioned the last time who they took on in the first round. But just to recap, Mr. Pfaff. Let's see. Who did Mr. Pfaff defeat in the first round?
He defeated James Salerno.
That was in the first round, yes. And then he defeated Jay Wimette in the next round. Mr. Willie defeated Jesse Bai. And then took out Mr. Brad Woodling to get to this round. So, all right, gentlemen, one of each, 10 seconds, then 20, and then 30. First one to three heads to the final four.
Well, unless you're the home team, you get a chance to match.
Unless you're the home
someday
team,
you're
going to get
that. You're going to get that right.
Yeah, I'm going to get that right.
By the finals, you'll have it.
By the final, by the 2017 tournament. First one to three, legitimately, no. Anyway, the winner of this.
Yeah, we got it. Go ahead.
The winner of this matchup punches their first ticket to the final four. Mr. Willie, you will go first, which means Mr. Pfaff, you will have the home inning for the first one and the ensuing ensuing rounds. Mr. Willie,
all right.
Pick a number between 1 and 140.
It's sad. I've been thinking of this all week, which number to pick, because Brad, we picked a funny one, and it didn't get asked last week, but I'm going to stick with 58. It's been doing me well.
Okay, 58. All right. Okay. 10 seconds. Get the ball rolling here. Which brash TV personality was blasted with a fire extinguisher at WrestleMania 5?
Morton Downey Jr.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
All right, he's on the board.
The right on the board. Of a documentary that's just come out.
Really?
Like they basically saying he's the forerunner to like Back and Limbaugh on all these guys.
That's true. I think that's definitely true. Did they talk about the WrestleMania 5 stuff in it at all?
I don't know. I just heard an interview on the podcast about it just a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right, Pfaff.
All right. Get you off to a good start. Mr. Pfaff, pick a number.
Okay. 22.
Okay. To attempt to tie things up, you have 10 seconds.
Okay.
Okay. In which month and year did WCW Monday Nitro expand to 3 hours? I need an answer.
Don't say September 1998.
It was actually a little bit earlier than that. It was January of 1998.
Oh, man.
Very close, though.
Okay. All right, you're up again. Pick another number.
All right, 15.
Okay, once again, 10 seconds.
Okay.
Which legendary Texas tough man was the special enforcer referee for the Yokozuna Undertaker casket match at the 1994 Survivor Series?
Chuck Norris.
Very nice. High five.
All right. Pfaff checks in. We're tied at one. Willie can put the pressure on, though, here. He gets two straight. Pfaff is in must-win mode.
Yes. And right. We are now on to the mediums for Mr. Willie. Pick a number between 1 and 191.
All right. Well, I had the guy over who figured out press your luck in the 80s, and I found a pattern in your numbers. But I'm gonna stick to 58 and hope that I get it right. Otherwise, I'm gonna go to my little trick.
You do know that guy went to prison and then died, right?
Yeah. So, I like to shoot high. My role models, I like to shoot high. You know?
Yeah, and he was also a hoarder and a lunatic. So, in any event,
you know a lot about him.
I watched a documentary about him.
So, I watched a documentary about the Bowtie Killer.
Who? Bob Backlund?
Bob Backlund?
No. Problem solved.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. Who competed in the first ever match to air on WWF SmackDown, not including the pilot, the one that aired in August? 20 seconds.
I have no idea. Let's go with 10 seconds. The Hardys against Edge and Christian.
Nothing for you.
That was a tough one. It was Billy Gunn and Jeff Jarrett.
Wow.
That's a hard one.
That is a hard one. Okay, pick another number, Mr. Willie.
Let's go 87.
87.
You should have went with your trick a little bit earlier.
Now you're going to jail. No. All right, 20 seconds. Name one of the three wrestlers that have been picked number one in the PWI 500 back-to-back years.
Kurt Angle.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong.
Bret Hart, Steve Austin, and John Cena.
All right.
All right, so we go to Mr. Pfaff, who may be dying over there. You all right?
Yeah, all right, I'm all right.
All right, yeah, Pfaff. So now would Morton Downey blow some smoke at you?
All right, so we go. Pfaff is in the medium. Pfaff, now if you get two right, now you put the pressure on Willie. Yeah. So,
all right.
Big spot here.
Pick a number.
Okay. Let's go with one.
One. All right. Okay. 20 seconds. Who won the epic main event between Ric Flair and Sting at the first Clash of the Champions?
Flair.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
A little bit of a tricky one.
Yeah.
Nobody. Ended a 45-minute draw.
You see, I was thinking that, but then I felt like, because didn't they do the whole like judge thing, and then like, yeah, I don't know, never mind.
No, you're thinking of the Flair Steamboat match.
Yeah, maybe
in Wrestle War,
yeah,
when Terry Funk turned
maybe
you on.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Yeah,
we are still tied at one, and Mr. Pfaff, pick another number.
Let's see, 100.
Okay. All right. Okay, 20 seconds. Where was the 1997 episode of Monday Nitro when Lex Luger defeated Hollywood Hogan to win the WCW world title?
Michigan, Detroit?
Pretty good.
All right, Pfaff. Technically Auburn Hills, but Detroit, Auburn Hills, pretty much a suburb. And
the Pistons do play there, and they're not the Auburn Hill Pistons.
Yes, that's so fine. All right, so it is 2-1.
But blame Willie, Jordan Duncan for that.
Yeah, we can. Anything Detroit related, whether it's bailouts or bankruptcies or anything.
Yes.
All right, so Willie, still in good position here, though. You get two right, you still put Pfaff in the defensive position. So,
and you still have a medium here, so pick a number.
All right, let's go. What are the numbers again?
1 to 191.
Let's go 126.
Okay. All right, 126. Okay. 20 seconds. Two Royal Rumble winners have taken place in Boston, or two Royal Rumble matches have taken place in Boston. Name the winners of both of them.
I'm not joking when I tell you that I studied this. One was – I was studying the series. One was Brock Lesnar. Then the other now that I have to guess. Let's go with Cena, John Cena.
Oh, I thought you had it.
Come on. Yep.
Brock Lesnar critics. And Alberto Del Rio.
I was there for that one.
Yep. Cena won it this past year. That one was in Phoenix. And the other one he won was at the Garden.
I've been reading so, the 09 encyclopedia was at our library. I was reading it this week. And
I applaud you for that, Willie. I do.
All right. All right, well, it's not over yet. We're not burying Willie. Let's go.
Nope.
Still tied here.
Nope.
Burying myself here. Let's go. Let's go 88.
88. Okay. Okay. You have 20 seconds. This wrestler won PWI's most popular wrestler in 2011, only to win its most hated wrestler last year. Name him.
Please be John Cena.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
It was CM Punk.
Good God.
Willie, it's most hated in kayfabe, not in real life.
Okay. They have kayfabe magazine stuff?
I know. PWI, baby. It's all right, PWI. Faf. Pressure is on. You're in the hards. If you get this, you win. If not, Willie will at least get a chance to match you.
Okay.
Pick a number between 1 and 202.
All right. Well, we don't go with my birthday date, and that's 26.
26. Okay. You have 30 seconds to punch your ticket to the Final Four. What was the trio of Kevin Sullivan, The Butcher, and Avalanche known as in 1995 WCW?
All right, Dungeon of Doom.
The Three Faces of Fear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dungeon of Doom came a little bit later with Shark and Zodiac were the names for those guys. But
Okay. All right. Damn.
All right. Faf, you're still up, though. You still get a chance here to get three, but that means Willie gets a chance to force overtime.
Yeah. Willie stays alive.
You're still in good shape here, though.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Faf, pick a number.
Six.
Okay. Six. All right. To set yourself up here. In what type of match did Vader challenge Sting to in early 1993, leading to a series of campy mini-movies featuring the two, including Sting visiting Vader in his mountain lair?
I'm not quite sure if I'm going to get it exactly right, but I'm hoping it's like close enough. It's the White Castle of Fear match.
Yeah, it was a strap match, but the White Castle of Fear was the name of the match. So,
all right.
All right, Faf in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Mr. Willie, you need two right here to send us to overtime.
Okay.
It's the stuff legends are made of.
Let's go 23.
23. Okay.
I want to get into these hards.
All right.
It's every woman's dream.
Yeah.
All right. Oh. Am I? Okay. Medium number 23. Okay. All right. Here we go. Which of the following did not occur during Shane McMahon's wild feud with Kane in the fall of 2003? This is multiple choice. A, someone was buried alive. B, a car crash. C, Kane tombstoned Linda. Or D, electrocuted testicles.
What were the first two again?
The first buried two alive. Were, someone was buried alive and there was a car crash.
Okay, it's 50-50 here for me. I'm going to go with buried alive.
Oh, yeah!
Damn it.
I had to build a little dramatic pause there, you know? All right, Willie stays alive.
Okay.
Move to the hards.
Move to the hards. All right. Willie,
this is my goal. My goal
was
not to get shut
lead.
Out.
Right.
My goal was not to get shut out this round and to get into the hard. So,
okay.
All right. We'll go with 58 again.
All right. 58. Okay. 30 seconds, and this will put you in position to win. 30 seconds. Which low-level second-generation mid-carder was fired from the World Wrestling Federation for tape recording locker room conversations in late 1999?
Sean Stasiak.
Very nice. High five.
All right, we head to overtime.
Oh, man.
All right. Mr. Willie, well done.
Thank you.
All right. We are in the we are in the hards from here on out.
All right.
All right, Mr. Pfaff.
Yes.
You are up.
All right. All right, numbers what? 1 through
1 to 202.
202. Let's see where 200.
Okay, 200. Okay. 30 seconds.
Okay.
Who was the only man to have held tag team gold in a major promotion in the 80s to have also won the 2002 version tag team titles that Stephanie McMahon created? 30 seconds.
We're not saying he won them in 2002, just that that's when that, you know, the version was created in late 02.
Yeah. Right.
All right, so like what was that again?
I'll read it again.
Okay.
Okay. This guy.
Okay.
This person held the only man to have held tag team gold in a major promotion in the 80s.
Okay.
Who've also won the WWE tag team titles that were created in 2002, but he won them. He could have won them after 2002.
All right. It was the titles on SmackDown.
Yeah, yep. Those
yeah, okay. The ones that start on the okay. SmackDown.
All right.
20 seconds.
Honestly, I have no idea. Willie, you'll probably win, but Hogan.
Now, if you want to crown him, then crown their ass.
It was Animal.
Animal.
Road Warrior Animal. Won, of course, with the Road Warriors in the 80s, and then with Heidenreich in 2005.
Yeah.
That was a tricky one. That was a tough one.
Yeah.
No games in the hards, my friend.
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Willie.
Mr. Yeah. Willie.
For the win.
Right.
For the win.
Let's go with 34.
Okay. 34. All right. Here we go. 30 seconds for the final four. Who replaced Barry Windham in the U.S. Express before Mike Rotundo left as well?
Barry Windham in the U.S. Express before Mike Rotundo left as well. It's going to be a guess again. I got it.
10 seconds.
Is it Spivey?
Hey, I have a winner!
Oh, yes. My Lord, he pulls it out.
Wow.
Dan Spivey.
Wow.
I was stuck between, and then this is how nervous I am, I was stuck between Tom Zink and Spivey, because I was thinking Can-Am connection. I'm like, well, thinking it was in Canada.
Well, sir, you chose correctly, Mr. Pfaff. Hell of a battle there.
Yeah, I thought you had
nice
it.
Work. That was a good one.
Comes thank
up
you.
Just short, but of course we know you'll be back next year.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right, Mr. Willie, congratulations. We'll talk to you in the Final Four. Scott, let's take a quick break. We'll wrap this show up. All right, the song fits a couple of meanings here. The first is that Steve Willie is in the Final Four.
My God. Unbelievable. An overtime win.
The rapture is upon us. Steve Willie in the Final Four.
Wow. It's like George Mason in 06.
Who would have thunk it, but there he is. Now, Brad, your performance was not as good in the trivia tournament.
It was not, but I could always say that I lost to the eventual winner. A lot, you know, people that finish in eighth place like to always claim when they lost the guy that won. So I'm rooting for Steve Willie.
Okay. And now we'll see if we thought your performance tonight was any better, because in a couple weeks here, Worlds Collide.
Yes.
The man that we never thought we'd actually have on the show, but we're very excited to speak to. If you're a fan of writing of wrestling reviews and you date back to the Attitude Era and in the earlier days of the internet, and he's still going strong today, of course, none other than Mr. Scott Keith himself.
I cannot believe this.
Will be joining us here on the Place to Be awesome. Podcast.
I have softened my opinion of Mr. Keith. I used to be a little grizzled back in the day, but he's I've become a big fan of his and much looking forward to having him on the program.
Of course, if you haven't visited his sites, rspwfaq.com, his blog. Mm-hmm. That's where Brad and I met, so it holds a little special place in our hearts. Scott Keith is a big proponent of the show, helps us a lot with publicizing and bringing viewers to the site and the show and everything else, and he's a fan as well, so looking forward to chatting some wrestling and some, we'll talk about his little career too, about how he got started and how he evolved to the books and to the site he's got going today, very successful stuff, so. And then, Scott, the week after that, now this one is, I haven't been able to sleep since we locked this one down.
I'm going to have to start finding new songs. Then I want to double up with Kurt Angle.
Staying down with the theme of writing and wrestling writers and columnists in the Attitude Era and online and everything else. The man who's inspired me to do my reviews, and I pretty much completely rip off his style. I quote him whenever I can, and we've used him a lot in our Vintage Vaults, his writing, and that is the one and only, the great CRZ, Christopher Robin Zimmerman.
I can't believe it.
I've been reading CRZ since the mid-90s. This guy was online in 92 and 93 doing reports of Primetime and the early editions of Raw.
Yep.
SlashWrestling.com has all his stuff. He has old Raws, old Prime Times. He's got Raws and Nitros from 98 to 02. He did a little bit of the ECW on Sci-Fi in 06. Just tons of great stuff. His style is incomparable. The work he put in and all the detail, play-by-play and notes was just amazing stuff. Very self-deprecating. He doesn't understand why anyone wants to talk to him on a podcast, but I will be gushing greatly over CRZ. So yeah. I am really looking forward to having him on. Should be a lot of fun. So that'll be a few weeks out from now. We're going to have back-to-back interviews, back-to-back weeks. Scott, yep. Very fitting we're getting these guys on back-to-back weeks, I thought.
Yes.
And it'll be Scott Keith and then CRZ. So a lot of fun there. So now, Brad, you have a little bit of affinity for Mr. Keith. You're a fan of his blog, a fan of his work, and you asked me if you could come on and join us for that interview.
That's correct. I did.
Okay. So Scott and I have decided to hold a performance review here tonight to judge you based on your past performances, your weekend visit here, and, of course, your trivia performance as well. I will cast my vote first, Bradley. Restart the music. Brad Woodling, I vote yes. You will be permitted to join us for the Scott Keith interview. Scott, how say your vote?
Brad Woodling, I vote no.
Oh!
Your trivia performance was pitiful, and your love of the Phillies is even worse.
Oh!
No support you.
I didn't even slag the Mets here.
The bitch is back. All right, sounds like we need
it. I'll try harder for next year.
Hey, you're not done yet. This is like gut check, man. You get three votes. We're going to bring in a third party for this.
We're going to bring in Al Snow in his bad jacket.
We're going to bring in a third party for this one, Mr. Woodling. Mr. Chad Campbell, are you with us?
Hi, I'm with you.
All right. Yes. As you may or may not know, Brad's on the hot seat right now in the gut check. I have voted yes for him to help us interview Scott Keith, but Scott voted no, citing his poor trivia performance as a reason. Chad Campbell, we need you to break this tie.
Chad, you're sympathetic to bad trivia performance.
You're not helping
right?
your cause, Brad.
No, that's not. You're right.
Chad? Did you hear that?
All right, Chad, what's your vote? Shall Brad be joining us to interview Scott Keith?
I must say I'm a little conflicted. We did have some Paul London-esque smarkiness from Brad today. He wanted to keep me off the staff of Place to Be Nation. He debt sets up to Providence, and now all of a sudden thinks he's a big-timer. So there's a lot of things coming to play, but I must say that He's bailed us out, all of us, definitely more times than I can count with the website. He has a face only radio can love. So I will indeed vote yes that he is allowed to join you guys on the interview with Scott Keith.
Gorilla, is the podcast getting any air at all?
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry,
Chad. I didn't hear that, so I'm not sure what
you
voted.
Brad, I'm not going to hear you either. So.
All right, Brad. It looks like Chad has delivered for you. He's come through. And you boys, your tight relationship has bailed you out once again. So Brad Woodling will be with us when we interview Scott Keith in a couple weeks. Awesome. Quick, Brad, give us about a minute on the website. What's hot? What's not? Everything's hot. There's nothing hot.
Everything's hot. And we're always, you know, we've talked about new talent on the previous podcast. You've heard about it. We're always looking to improve. We've got some new gaming contributors. We've got a great comic section. We had Lita Clark start today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got more in-depth movie coverage. We're always going to get great wrestling stuff. We've added on some podcasts that we really like. So it's continuing to evolve. You got to check every day. We're serious when we say that because there's four or five new things. We're really excited about a lot of the new voices, you know, new people to read on the placetobenation.com. So definitely check it out.
Tell them quick about all the you mentioned the comic stuff, but last week we had a huge week for comics.
Yeah, absolutely. With Comic-Con, we had our whole comic staff put out a recap of the Marvel and DC stuff. So that's Todd Wepper, Nick Duke, and Greg Phillips. And to tie into the Scott Keith thing, a lot of these guys had, you know, and of course with Andrew Reich and others had kind of met through him too. So it's all the circle of the internet life here.
Mm-hmm.
Great coverage there. And then they came back twice in 1 week. And they did a great series on Wolverine, the movie that came out last Friday. So if you're interested in that, definitely check it out. And what we did, and Andrew also had us covered with some other Comic-Con stuff, which was really good, too.
Yeah. Also today, I want to just plug quickly, Jeremy Nichols did a cool little review on Silent Rage, a movie starring Chuck Norris. And also Josh Richard did a really good piece on Sharknado and B-level movies in general, kind of their legacy. Behind that, of course, you have all the recaps from last week as well. Scott's Impact, Matt Petticord's SmackDown 2. So check those out. More stuff coming this week. The Pop Culture Desert Island Tournament is still going. Round 2 voting continuing this week. So get over there and vote if you haven't yet. And then we'll get Round 3 probably kicked off next week. So why don't we go ahead and wrap things up, Scott? We'll be back on Wednesday night, Judgment Day 2000. Next Monday, we'll be here with King of the Ring 2000. And then hopefully the plan right now is for Kevin Kelly to join us next Wednesday. We'll talk a little bit about the Ring of Honor taping and then go through the first half of 2000 in the world of WWF. The week after that, heading into SummerSlam, we have another roundtable for you like we did for WrestleMania, old school SummerSlam. So we'll have an eclectic mix of guys. We'll talk about that next week. And then finally, that last show will be headlines into SummerSlam as well. So those are your next couple weeks here on the Place to Be podcast. Everyone check out placetobenation.com. If you're interested in writing, please let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook or at our email accounts. All those are listed on the staff page of the website. Always looking for comics, TV, music, sports, wrestling, your choice. Let us know. We'll review your sample and then bring you on board. So all that said, everyone have a great night. That's Chad. That's Brad. That's Scott. I'm Dad. Right? Is that Ryan? We're out. Talk to you Wednesday.
Okay, Saget.
Son of Dad. Saget? What the hell does that mean?
Like Bob Saget. Like Full House.
Oh. Well, weren't they...
Oh, sorry. Rotella's not here.
So Uncle Jesse was a dad, too.
Yes, he was.
Chad's got nothing snarky to say.
Hopefully Brad doesn't get pumped like he did versus Willie in the Scott Keith interview. That's all I got to say.